Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from John Ray from CCD.
So
tell me a little bit about CCD.
CCD is the Council of Canadians with Disabilities. It was founded in the 70s as then the Coalition of Provincial Organizations of the Handicapped. That's who its membership was in those days, Provincial Cross-Disability Coalitions. Today there are nine of them. New Brunswick has never had one. It has a Premier's Council, but no citizen-led cross-disability coalition. About 25 years ago, the membership of the organization and its name was changed to CCD when it added a number of national organizations like the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians, Disability Women's Network of Canada, the Thalidomide Victims Association of Canada, People First of Canada, the National Education Association of Disabled Students, and so forth. So we are a cross-disability organization that primarily works on issues at the national level.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you reach out to individuals with disabilities about your work?
The membership of CCD itself are those organizations, along with two members at large who are in council. So the reach out to the grassroots is really to be done by our members. We do send out information fairly widely. We have published newsletters over the years. We've conducted research and so forth. But the real reach to the grassroots is really through our members and also through our committees. A lot of work of CCD is done by its committees. It's Medical Aid and Dying Committee, the Social Policy Committee that I have the honor to chair, our Human Rights Committee, our Transportation Committee, and our International Committee. It's through and those committees are made up of some members from Council and a number of non-members as well. It's an opportunity for CCD to bring in other people directly into the work that we do.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the key issues that various groups within CCD are working on?
Government these days, and I guess this isn't totally new, would prefer that our community come to it with one united, consistent voice. Well, that is, in my mind, naive and unrealistic, because although we as consumers with disabilities do have some similar issues, you know, the lack of transportation options in many places, the lack of employment opportunities, poverty, those sorts of things, they are unique to all of us. But each disability group also has its own particular issues. For example, for individuals with intellectual disabilities, they're looking for material that they can understand, information in plainer language. For me as a blind person, I'm looking at information in a format I can read in multiple formats, whether that be electronic large print of Braille. For someone who is deaf, they're looking for interpreter services, and so on and so forth. So we have some common needs, Cameron, but the nature of our particular conditions means we have some individual needs, too. So transportation has always been a key issue. The federal government, over the last year, released a new regulation which talks about making kiosks at airports more accessible, providing ensuring that there will be relief areas for guided service animals, and so forth. And there is currently consultation going on right now for a second stage in this regulatory process. One of the issues that's primary on our plate is the whole notion of one person, one fare. There was a court decision that required Air Canada and WestJet to allow a person with a disability to bring an attendant at no cost if that individual would need assistance on board the aircraft. Well, that ruling only covered Air Canada and WestJet, and only for domestic travel. Well, of course, if a person needs an attendant on an aircraft traveling in Canada, I think it's only reasonable to assume that same person needs an attendant if they're traveling on some other aircraft or if they're traveling outside of Canada. So that's an issue, the extent to which service animals will be allowed in the cabin with or without needing to be in a carrier is another big issue. Poverty remains an issue. In this country, Cameron, some people still have to choose between filling prescription drugs that have been prescribed by their doctor or putting food on their table. We believe that should never be the case in a country like Canada. Never, ever. The whole area of poverty, and a lot of politicians have basically said the solution to our poverty issues is go get a job. Well, that, of course, is an unrealistic goal for many persons with disabilities, but for those of us who are out there struggling to find work, these government officials are not putting into place new programs, and they are not even suggesting where are all these jobs we are suddenly supposed to go out there and get. Right now, the Ontario government has a consultation going on regarding a new poverty reduction strategy, but the online survey, and I encourage people to take it, is really only employment-related, and it doesn't really talk about the needs for a greater degree of adequate income for those who cannot work.
So, in your time with CCD, has there been any success that you've achieved that you'd like to share?
We have. I think over the 45 years that I've been involved, we do see some successes. The fact that we now have a regulation in the transportation sector, something we've called upon for a long time. The fact that the government has reinstituted the Court Challenges Program, which makes it possible for organizations, individuals to get funding to challenge government decisions at the federal level. The fact that persons with disabilities are now covered under protective legislation all across this country through human rights commissions, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and most recently the Accessible Canada Act. The problem, Cameron, is that this rise in legislative protection, which is important, and these days we see that the largest percentage of cases filed with every human rights commission across Canada every year is on the ground of disability. But clearly, we haven't been able to translate that legal protection into what we call substantive equality. Too many of us are still poor, unemployed, isolated, and on the margins. But there's no question that progress has happened. As a blind person, I see it in the whole area of access to information. The internet is by no means perfect. It's not. But the whole world of information overload that is the reality to sighted folks like you is now the reality for me. That's a good thing. More books are now available in multiple formats. Not nearly enough. But, you know, there's progress happening. Some movies and live theater comes with audio description. That's relatively new. So there are definite areas we can point to where progress has happened. And I would suggest to you and to your listeners that much of that progress has come about because persons with disabilities came together beginning in the mid-70s, formed our own organizations, and began to speak for ourselves and take collective action to try and do something about the unmet needs that we identified.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In the next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with
Celeste Simpson, co-president of DSSA at the University of Windsor.
She'll be telling me a little bit about an upcoming gala they're hosting. So, what was the inspiration behind it?
Actually, we just started doing galas last year, and essentially it was just to kind of bring the community together and kind of join forces with some of the organizations we work with and just have a night of fun with everybody in the community.
So, how have you gone about reaching out to the community about this?
Well, we have a couple organizations that we've consistently worked with over the years. We have Abode Respite, Roots to Wings, Up About Down, just a couple of things we've done over the years with them. We've hosted events with them, and that's how we got in contact. So we reached out to them. A couple of the students are in placement this semester, so they've reached out that way through their placements. And then we've gone out on social media and reached out that way to just anybody in Windsor and surrounding communities that'd like to join us.
So you mentioned you've done similar events before. Are there any challenges in putting something like this together?
There's been a few. It's just we're not a very big club at the university, so it's kind of hard to reach out in terms of social media, and we don't have that big of a following. But it's actually been quite popular this year. We run like our Facebook and Instagram page, and a lot of people are sharing it. And I think the further you reach out with like families and organizations, they talk to organizations and families that they know. So I feel like this year's has been a lot better than last year, so that's good.
Well, to look at the converse side of things, in your time as part of the club, has there been any success story that stands out for you that you'd like to share?
I've been in it since my first year, so I've been in it for 3 years now. I haven't been too involved in the last couple years. I was just kind of a general member. But I always love working with Roots to Wings because we do a themed event, so this year we did Christmas. I think we did Valentine's Day 1 year. And just seeing how happy they get that they get to do something different on a daily basis and than what they do on a daily basis. It always brings a smile to my face. They get excited. They get to make crafts, and we, like, play music and just have a lot of fun. To me, that was a win on my part.
So if you could send any message to the community about why this work matters and why students and community members with disabilities should be included, what would you say?
Well, I feel like University of Windsor is starting to kind of like recognize disability a little bit more with our program. But it is fairly new, and there isn't really too much with it. So I hope that in the future they can add a little bit more. But because I'm in social work and disability studies, and we don't start like the disability like core things until our third year, but they're working on changing that a little bit. So I guess just add a little more courses, I guess, a little more educational programs. I hope that what we do kind of spreads a little bit of awareness as well, and students are welcome to come to us about any issues and stuff and everything like that. So that's, I guess, just kind of keep talking about it, keep doing these events, and hoping that we get the word out and expand the program a little bit.
So, if you could see any one thing added to the existing infrastructure, what would it be?
Of the Disability Studies program?
Yes.
I guess, again, like, more courses. I'm not in that part yet, so I don't know the extent of what the program is like. But just, like, I know that there's two core disability courses, but I wish there was a little bit more than that and touched on a little bit more about it. But I can't speak too much to it because I haven't taken them yet. But I guess just more courses offered in, like, maybe first and second year as opposed to waiting until third year. But I think they're doing a great job with what they have. They just need to add a little bit more and a little more advocacy work and kind of stuff like that, outreach and everything.
So, what convinced you to become an advocate and to get involved?
Honestly, the presidents in my first year came to one of my classes and just spoke about the group, and I don't know, it just really caught my eye. I was really intrigued about the work that they did. I kind of got into disability studies as like a backup, but I'm like, you know what, this is an opportunity to really make use of my degree and, like, do something with it before I get into my, like, senior years or whatever. So, yeah, I thought, like, the work that they were doing was really great, and I never really had gotten involved with anything disability-related, and I took this as an opportunity to do that, and I really love doing all the advocacy work and the reach-out that we do and working with our organization. So, yeah, it's been great.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
UWindsor Campus Police remind you to always be aware of building safety and security to help prevent theft and break-ins. Always keep track of your belongings and never leave them unattended, even for a minute. You should report suspicious behavior immediately to Campus Police at 519-253-3000, extension 1234. Examples include a stranger going from office to office, a person loitering for a long period of time, or somebody waiting outside of offices near closing time. Always stay aware of building safety and security on campus. UWindsor Campus Police is here to help you.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from John Ray from CCD and Celeste Simpson from the University of Windsor. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Amanda Judge, who'll be telling us a little bit about wheelchair hockey. Tell me a little bit about your experiences with power hockey.
Well, this is my 17th season, and I had never played on any kind of team before. And I discovered that I absolutely loved it. The game was fun in and of itself, but the thing for me that was the most important was just being part of a team. And you win as a team, you lose as a team, and just feeling like you're part of something. The coaches and the other players, I mean, the other players all have their own disabilities, and it feels really normal. You know, everybody treats each other with respect, and nobody really cares what your disability is. You just go out there, you play hockey, and you play whatever position suits your ability level the best, and your coaches, they don't patronize you in any way. They push you to do the best you can, and I like the challenge of it. It's been a lot of fun.
So, what sort of modified equipment do you use in the game?
Well, we all have electric wheelchairs, but some of our players can't hold the stick. So we take a hockey stick and we attach it either to the side of their chair, or some players like to have the stick between their legs. And we put a cross piece on the blade, so it looks like a T if you look at it from above. And that allows a player who can't hold the stick in their hand to carry the ball and to have enough control over it that they can shoot by moving their chair. I can hold my stick, but I can't do a lot of things with it. I'm not strong enough. So I also use a T blade to help me carry it and have some control over the ball. So that's one thing we do. Some of our players modify their hockey sticks a bit. You can buy ordinary plastic sticks because it's a floor hockey type of sport. And some players drill holes in the shaft or holes in the blade to make it lighter. Other players use a European-style hockey stick, which is a titanium shaft and then a blade that has a whole lot of holes in it. It's almost like a net-style blade, but it's plastic. And those are a lot lighter as well. That's what I use. And for a lot of our players, it just gives them a little bit more ability to swing the stick. Our nets are a little bit longer and lower than standard NHL-style nets. But other than that, the equipment is pretty standard. If you don't wear eyeglasses, you wear plastic eye goggles just to protect in case you get hit with the ball. And if you want, it's not mandatory, but some of us wear shin pads and things like that. But equipment-wise, it's not an expensive sport to play. So that's good for a lot of our players, too.
So what are some of the challenges in the sport itself?
Well, you have to assess players because we try and make sure that players of different levels of disability are on the floor at all times. So we have a ranking system, and each year when we're coming up to a tournament, we discuss that a little bit, see if there's any way that we can improve upon it. So you assess players based on their level of ability. So if you have a player who's basically able-bodied from the waist up, no impairments, good physical strength, they have excellent reach, they can shoot with force and velocity, then they're likely to be a level one player. And you're only allowed one of those on the floor per team at any time. And a level two player is a player who may not have the reach of a level one or may be weaker than a level one, but is still expected to shoot and score quite frequently. And then level three players are usually one of two types. They're either stick attached or they're like me. They can hold a stick, but they don't have a lot of physical power to do much with it. And we make sure that at least one stick-attached player is on the floor at all times. And we also have level twos on the floor. And we just try and make sure that each level is represented. So that's one of the challenges. And the other is just in tournaments, we have to make sure that we have an on-site wheelchair repair expert with basic equipment if anybody has, you know, gets a foot pedal broken or anything like that. And sometimes travel is a challenge, especially if you have to fly in. Cause depending on what city you're flying out of, sometimes there's a limit on how many wheelchairs they will take on a flight at any one time. And, yeah, so there, you know, there's some logistics there to work out. But for the most part, we get around them without too much difficulty.
So, to look at the converse side of things, what sorts of successes have you experienced in your time with the sport?
Well, London won the Canadian Championship in 2011, which was a really big deal for us. It was the first time that we'd ever won it, and that was really exciting for us. And we've been building up our team again the past few years, and we came in second to Ottawa at the Canadian National Championship this past summer. And that was exciting as well. So it's just a matter of, you know, bonding with your teammates and just enjoying the travel. And, it's a success to go to any tournament and enjoy yourself and come back, everybody in one piece and, you know, no seriously broken equipment. And so just for us, we just enjoy the game. And whatever position we come in at a tournament, it leaves us with a lot of memories. And those are great things to talk about, usually for years afterwards.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Accessible travel was an interesting point raised in the last interview, so much as you can get these people to their game. You can get them anywhere you want, really. But the question is the venue accessible? Will they have something meaningful to do in terms of equal opportunity when they arrive? something I think a lot about. Sure, we can get people in the door these days, but is that as far as we go? Is it enough to say we have an accessible entry point, or we have this and that? But if it's not equal contribution. Now, we heard about Disability Studies Gala. I'm hopeful that this venue is something that is accessible and inviting students with an interest in disabilities. For the fact is, nobody can speak better to these matters than those really affected. I mean, we as a society can assume what needs to be in place in terms of accessibility. We can't always guarantee we're right. We can't just presume our efforts in throwing money at a problem are going to make it practical and livable for a person with a disability. And Celeste was entirely right that people are becoming more and more aware of these matters. But awareness is never a complete product, in my opinion. It's always a matter of the individual taking time to learn what they can, not to learn what they're legally obligated to do, but instead asking the question, what does this mean to me? How does this affect me? Do I know anyone with a disability? Has someone with a disability been in my family? What part of their adaptation can I make my own to make things better? You sell it to people on the idea that it's about stronger communities, and it's about something personal. Chances are you will get a better response. People might even ask the questions. They might even be curious about the matters of disability life. Fact is, once a person gains that kind of enlightenment, it doesn't go away. It's not like they can hear about someone doing something remarkable, like the person with a vision impairment climbing Mount Everest. You don't just hear about that and not ask any follow-ups. You don't just say, oh yeah, that's great, what else is in the news today? No, there's this hunger for knowledge that people with a committed heart to disability life have. It's always a question of, what's happening now? What have people achieved since the last time I spoke to them? What can we hope for the future? And there's always the question of monitoring, making sure our ideals and our actions match up. The regulations are fine to have on paper. Legally, we have to have this, that, and the other thing. But are we making sure they're in proper working order? Are we making sure that everyone who wants to can make use of a facility or be a part of an employment situation, get an education, what have you? It's fine to build it, but keep it in working order. The fact is, there is no such thing as fully accessible. You're never going to have a design that works for everybody. But the goal isn't to get it to where it works for everybody. It's to get it as close as possible. You can't achieve an impossible task by guaranteeing that every person who comes through the door can easily get through the door. But you can say, we've made every effort. We've taken reasonable steps that a decent human being would. And beyond that, making sure whatever is on the other side of that door is something that matters. Not just assuming that a person with a disability will want to do this or that, but sharing in the individual's story, asking who they are, what their interests are, what they're passionate about, and what they'd like to achieve. That is the foundation of how we build understanding. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.